I'm speaking today with Ciro Rodriguez, who is running for the nomination, Democratic nomination in Congressional District 23. Ciro, thank you very much for talking to me today. I would normally ask people why they're running for a given office, but you used to represent District 23. So talk to me a little bit about, your time representing District 23.
Well, let me first of all thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity to share with you some of my thoughts. I've had the opportunity to serve District 23 for 4 years. I've actually have had four different other congressional districts because I've been redistricted in the 12 years that I have served in Congress. It's a district considered one of the largest in the nation, and now it's even been expanded to 29 counties. And so it's even larger. It's a very diverse district. It has, the largest border, about 800 miles along the border, or 713 miles along the border, to be exact, I think. And so it's a border economy. We also have the sheep and goat industry. We have a lot of gas and oil, both not only in the Pecos, but also in the Lower Valley, in the Winter Garden area, with the Eagle Ford. And then gas, and then also the Winter Garden area growers. We have cattle, and we have also leading the country also in electricity in West Texas, and beginning to do some things with solar, which is very exciting. And it also has a strong base of veterans. It's a strong tradition of defending our country with Fort Bliss in El Paso, Laughlin Air Force Base in Del Rio, and of course San Antonio. We have Lackland Air Force Base, Randolph Air Force Base, Fort San Houston, Brooks, and others. And so it's a strong military region of West Texas and San Antonio. So it's a very diverse area. But a very beautiful district. It has the count was about seven national parks, from the Big Bend to the Missions in San Antonio, to also, it's not a national park, but the Guadalupe Mountains, as well as the Missions in El Paso are very beautiful there at San Elizario in that area. So it's a diverse area, both politically and economically. And the reasons I'm running is because I've always been about trying to make a difference. I've always been about trying to make things happen. I feel really good about the inroads that we have made in Presidio for flood control and providing them with solar and other entities. Every single county, I can tell you that we've had some impact in terms of providing access to certain types of services in El Paso. In Tornillo area, it's the only bridge. We were able to get $97 million for a bridge into Mexico out of Tornillo, and that should be an economic boost for the Lower Valley of El Paso. For the West Texas area, we were instrumental in helping in a variety of different projects. In Alpine, for example, money to the airport, money to the library, money to the inner city infrastructure there, the roads there in Alpine. Not to mention, Del Rio and Eagle Pass, the projects that we brought into Del Rio and San Antonio also, with the river extension in San Antonio, as well as legislation such as Brook City Base. I also feel real good about having passed and participated in the Appropriations Committee and the VA Committee that basically delivered the GI Bill that was passed by Democrats when we were in control of the House. And we have 406,000 veterans right now attending our universities throughout the country. And over expenditures of over $12 billion, we got to make sure that we continue to fund those programs and allow those young soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan to be able to further their education. And we're going to see the fruits of that in the next 5 to 8 years or sooner.
All right. As you said, you served in Congress for 12 years. What would you say were some of your highlights as a representative? Some legislation you passed that you're most proud of?
Well, I'm really proud of. I mentioned the Brook City-based legislation that allowed us to basically turn Brooks City Base, which used to be an Air Force base, into a job creating area, and it's really has progressed really well. I also got elected right after they closed Kelly Air Force Base, and we were instrumental, and now we have over 14,000 jobs at Kelly, and it's no longer a base, but it's an area where we have Boeing and Pratt Whitney and a lot of companies there doing a lot of the national defense types of things. We also were instrumental in passing a variety of pieces of legislation for veterans, especially this war is the first war where we've had the National Guard participate. 40% of the soldiers have been National Guardsmen. So a lot of them do not qualify for the same things that the regulars do, but they were doing the same thing in both Iraq and Afghanistan that the regular soldier did. So we changed a lot of the legislation to allow them to be able to participate and be able to get engaged and benefit from those services. So I was pleased to have done that. In addition, we were involved in legislation along the border to get, I put $60 million to all the border counties from Brownsville to Cameron County all the way to California, San Diego, as well as the northern county, and was able to get the local sheriffs some resources to help reinforce the border. And part of that is because a lot of, like, for example, the city of Presidio, they have less than two policemen. They have one and one part-timer. That might have changed since 2 years ago, but that's what they had. So this provided them the sheriff additional resources for them to buy vehicles and equipment necessary on the border there, because usually the communities across are larger, such as Ojinaga is much larger than Presidio. Tierra Negras is about 5-10 times bigger than Eagle Pass, and the same thing for Laredo and Nuevo Laredo, both Acuña as well as Juarez and El Paso. The communities on the other side they're much larger, so they have an impact on the community there. And usually the local community is burdened with having to provide the resources and not get enough help from the federal. So I was able to get that money for the border counties, so I felt really good about that. In addition to that, we did some legislation with kids. One of the first things we did when we took the control of the house is we put a stop to the high interest rates for students attending our universities. These are federally guaranteed loans, and the banks were ripping off the kids, in all honesty, and charging them outrageous interest rates. We put a stop to that, and we couldn't impact the ones that have been impacted by it because it's a contract. But the ones that are getting it now are paying lower interest rates, and we got to do more there because of the high interest rates for students. During the stimulus package, we put the largest amount of money into education in recorded history. We doubled Title I monies to every single school district in the country, including Texas. We doubled the special ed monies. We brought it up for special ed, for example, from 17% to 40%. And I was on the appropriation committee that pulled out that package, that stimulus package, that also put money into higher ed, and most of the higher ed monies for Pell Grants and student loans came through that effort. And we also put money into infrastructure. In spite of what Rick Perry said that he wasn't going to accept it, he accepted everything except $800 million for teacher raises. But Texas got the second largest amount of money next to California, close to $16, $17 billion in a two-year period there. And so I felt good about that one. And that particular bill, I know the conservatives were, but that's what saved the country in terms of going into collapse, during the economic crisis. And so I felt good about that.
Okay. As you said, you represented District 23 for two terms. You were elected in 2006 and lost re-election in 2010. Do you think, what do you think happened in 2010? Do you think something...
What happened in 2010 is, if you look at the numbers, the reason why we lost is our turnout didn't come out. If you look at what came out, in 2 years before and the previous times, the number of Democrats didn't come out. In Bexar County, for example, every single Democratic county judge lost that was running. In Hays County and throughout Texas, there was over 1,100 Democratic elected officials that lost. And throughout the country, it was. And usually, whatever president wins, the opposite party usually gains seats on the off year, and that has happened throughout history. For example, after we win this time around with Obama, on the off year, we should lose some, and that's the way it happens. And there's been, but this one was a huge tsunami, and there was a huge contributions from the other side that pumped in huge amounts of money that because of what the Supreme Court did on their allowing corporations to contribute without knowing where the money's coming from, without committees that can decide to spend, they were accusing me of a multitude of things that they came up. There was negative ads, and a lot of those negative ads had a lot to do with people staying at home. And so we got to get our Democrats to show up, and that's the main reason that we lost.
Okay.
In all honesty, and it was a swing district also.
All right. Well, let's talk about let's look forward now. Obviously the economy is the top issue on everyone's mind. If you're reelected, what sorts of legislation or policies would you want to pursue or support that would help the economy?
Let me first of all say that one of the ways that we're going to get out of this mess is that we have to, what has made this country is the middle class. The middle class has created what we have in this country. So we have to come up with pieces of legislation that reinforce and give credit to the middle class. And that's important, from giving them tax credits for sending their kids to college, to providing them incentives to further their education. We need a huge amount of investment, I think, in personally. This is the time when you invest on the basics, which means, to me, it means education in both public ed and higher ed. It means an investment in infrastructure, roads, just the opposite of what the Republicans are doing. Right now they're proposing to cut some $46 billion from transportation. My God, we need about $300 billion more just on the federal side, just to keep up. And this is not the time to cut back on infrastructure, because that will create jobs and it will provide the apprenticeships to provide the future generation of skilled labor force, whether it be electricians or carpenters or whatever. That's what's needed now, and that investment not only in infrastructure but education. But we also need an emphasis on energy. We need to diversify our portfolio on energy. And this president has been the only president that has ever provided through the stimulus package that I was responsible in the Appropriations Committee the most money for alternative fuels and others than any other. And we need to continue to do that. And the fourth area is we gotta continue to move forward on our number one cost to both individuals and families and businesses and political subdivisions such as school districts and counties is health care. So health care is one of the major costs. We cannot compete globally when a company knows that 30% of their cost is going to go to health care. That's why the health care plan that we have passed, yes, it needs some tweaking and is important, because it also puts a limit on the number amount of profits that the health insurance get, and what the Ryan budget does now is does just the opposite. They begin to dismantle Medicare as we know it, and it's going to cost us more. It's going to destroy it, and that's what the Republicans are doing with the Ryan plan, and the Ryan budget. They're not only cutting education, but they're also cutting transportation, and they're cutting health care, and they're going to run us into the hole again. And so that's why it's so important. This election is about two different visions. One vision of, if you can imagine, their proposals, their vision is, number one, trying to, you know, reduce any kind of powers that any of the working families have, such as unions, which is what has created also the middle class. They're trying to do away with pensions. They're trying to do away with any kind of rights that the workers have. They're trying to. They're also trying to go after any kind of good quality clean air or quality of water issues. They're going after trying to dismantle Medicare and cut their Medicaid. They're also going after Social Security. And so if you can imagine, you know, that kind of country, it's not the same. That's not the America that we know. The America that we know is one that, that looks in terms of the quality of life issues, and we ought to be judged how we treat our most vulnerable, which is our kids and our seniors. And by the way, their war and their vision, you know, against the middle class, we're not going to win because it's who pays the cheapest for the workers. And we're not going to win that battle. And we don't want to win that battle because we'll never beat China and the third world countries for cheaper labor. What we need to do is invest in our people, which is our greatest resource. And now with the investment in technology, what we need to do is invest in legislation that will invest in research and technology and in investment in our human capital, which is education and higher ed and public ed and the trades. And so that's what I believe that is needed in order to prepare this country for, you know, to be able to compete in the global economy. Because now, for the first time in our history, one of the things that's different is that now we have to compete. In the past, America had all the resources, we had all the technology, and we had all the knowledge, and we could make. And now you go to Europe, and they have resources, they have technology, and so now we have to compete. So we have to learn to compete, and so we got to be able to come up to the plate. And as government, we have a role to play there.
Okay. There's been a lot of talk lately about income inequality and the way the tax code tends to favor folks who make more income, especially income that comes from, you know, capital rather than labor. What would you like to see done about that?
Well, for one, I've already voted to do away with the Bush tax cuts. And I know my opponent, the conservative Pete, has indicated that he's not in favor of that. But we've got to do that. We cannot. That's one of the reasons. There's about four or five reasons, but that's one of the reasons that got us into debt. That, you know, the tax cuts to the wealthy. We got to do the right thing, and we got to help the middle class. By cutting the taxes to the upper, you know, we put the burden in the middle class, and that's not good. And right now, the ones who are carrying the burden is the middle class. We also give tax cuts to people that take jobs abroad, which is just the opposite of what we ought to be doing. If they're coming in with jobs, then we have to give them incentives. But not if they're taking jobs away, and that's exactly what we've been doing. And so it's just the opposite. So, yes, we need to look at all those tax holes and do the right thing. And I think as Democrats, we have to look at those tax incentives that would reinforce the middle class and help the middle class move forward versus what the other side is doing is basically helping the Wall Street people of the world who have done extremely well in spite of the economy. They're doing well. The rest of us are the ones that are hurting. And so we still haven't done enough to put a cap on what's occurring on Wall Street and making it more transparent. And so I still feel that we need to do a lot more there. People are not going to invest unless they feel comfortable. And so we've got to make it more transparent. And that's not occurring. The other side is verbalizing just the opposite. And so we need to hold corporate America accountable, just like we need to hold elected officials accountable. And so I agree with the Tea Party on one thing, and that is that we need to hold politicians accountable. But I also agree with the Wall Street people about holding Wall Street accountable. We need to do both in order for us to move forward. And so so in the area of the tax code area, it needs to be cleaned up. And we need to do everything we can to do away with some of those loopholes that favor special interests. And we also need to look in terms of how campaigns are run. Huge amounts of money that are contributors, and that basically puts people on the spot. I'm a grassrooter, and I've always I've raised my fair share of money, but I've also tried to do the right thing and try to get communities and service communities. I haven't been about getting elected and just being there for the sake of being there, as some of my opponents are. And so I hope to continue to make a difference.
Okay. As you said earlier, the District 23 contains a large segment of the border between U.S. and Mexico. Talk to me about the current state of border security. You hear a lot of bad stories, but I believe a lot of them tend to be exaggerated. What's the state of the border look like?
We actually are doing a really good job, and I'll give you some examples. We had in Rio Grande, which is not part of my area, but I was on the Homeland Security on the Appropriations Committee, and they reported to us when some of the FETAs and the gangs came and took over the Mexican side. On our side, I can tell you because people call me and told me, Cito, you would be proud. And these weren't law enforcement people. These were people from the community. And they were telling me, you would be proud that we were ready, if anything came across, to be able to protect our citizens and do what we needed to do. And so I think we have a lot that we have done. Although I agree that we have not done enough, because Mexico is our number one trading partner, and they're going through some serious problems. And whatever happens in Mexico has a direct impact, especially in Texas. And some people can argue in the rest of the country, but for Texas, it impacts us directly. And so, because they're our number one trading partner, and so it's important that we keep good relationships, but that we do whatever we can. And they're coming up with their elections also, and that's going to be key. And so we're going to have to continue to play a role in seeing how we can help get rid of the mafia and those kind of things, and whatever we can do to help. I see that more of a serious situation than anything else in the Middle East, in all honesty, because that's more directly can directly impact us if it gets any worse. But having said that, we also need to expedite trade. We have done a number on ourselves and shot ourselves in the foot. The terrorists would want to hurt us economically, and we got to make sure we don't do that to ourselves when we stop the flow of traffic back and forth. And I have put money into the arms, to putting a stop to the arms going across. I put $15 million on appropriation, and then we put some additional ones to stop seeing how we can. And there have been some programs that have been established as a result of that. And we got to do more of that so that guns do not go into Mexico, for drugs. And so the border the other thing that's needed is an immigration plan. And I really support, I have voted on the DREAM Act, and I'll continue to support that. And I encourage people to vote on the DREAM Act. That's going to be in the Democratic ballot, actually. There's going to be three resolutions, and one is the DREAM Act. So I would encourage people to vote for that. And those are youngsters that were brought here when we were 3 or 4 or 5 years old. And they were brought here illegally, and now they find themselves in their 20s or 30s and going to college and graduate from our high schools. And we need to see how we can expedite and allow them to move into legal status. And we need an immigration plan that also takes into consideration families and do what we need to do there. And if anybody has broken the law, then we need to send them abroad. And we're doing that too. But we need to do it in a way that makes sense and that is just.
All right.
And so, okay.
Yeah, you you pretty much anticipated my follow-up question about immigration reform. Do you have any hope that that actually can happen? It seems like we've talked about it a lot. The Bush administration almost passed it before the Republicans killed it. Can we pass immigration reform?
It's like the issue of abortion. It's a wedge issue. And as long as it's a wedge issue, we're not going to get anywhere. If I can use it, for example, if somebody uses it against me and it works, they're going to keep using it. But everybody understands, when you talk to the Restaurant Association, the National Restaurant Association, the National Construction People, the laborers, the motel hotel industry, the farmers, the ranchers, mostly all the industries understand that we need an immigration plan, and that makes sense, that brings in the workers that we need and allows an opportunity for them to work with some degree of dignity. And I think that both Republicans and conservatives and Democrats agree. Where the problem is with the right-wingers, such as Conseco and others in the Tea Party that are just adamant and are not, and Lamar Smith that are not practical and are using it as a wedge issue. And as long as it works as a wedge issue, then we're not going to be able to get anywhere. But hopefully we it won't work, and we can start looking at it logically and be able to make some agreements and look in terms of what's beneficial for America. Do we need workers in agriculture? Yes, we do. I need them in the winter garden area. Do we need the workers for sheep shearing in West Texas? Yes, we do. That's the only ones who does the sheep shearing is the Mexicans that come over and help us out with the sheep shearing in West Texas with the sheep and goat industry. Do we need it for other industries? Yes. The restaurant, the motel, hotel, the construction, and other fields. During Katrina, most of those were people from Mexico that helped us in Louisiana. And so, yes, there's a need. In spite of the unemployment, and there's still need. And so I think that if we just looked at it logically, I think we could come up with some agreements.
Okay. If you do win the nomination, and after the primary, President Obama calls you up and says, "Ciro, I'd like to come down to your district and campaign with you," what would you tell him, and what would you want him to talk about in District 23?
Well, number one, I would definitely want him to come down, and I would want him to talk. In fact, we would be encouraging anyone to help us out along the border. Infrastructure, I would push the importance of infrastructural needs, not only issues of the economy, but the economic development that deals with that. I mean, when I talk about economic development, I mean about basic things such as roads, bridges, sewage plants, water projects that are needed, and an investment in our infrastructure. About health care, the number of people in our district that still that will benefit from having access to good quality care that's accessible and affordable, that would make sense. And so I would welcome that.
All right. And when people do get to vote in this primary, it's been a long process, but we get to vote on May 29th. Why should they vote to give you another opportunity to run in District 23 and not one of your opponents?
Well, I think what I offer is, number one, the experience. I offer the seniority. If I go to Washington, I've been in appropriations. I can wind up in appropriations again. Someone else, it would take them 8 years, 6 to 8 years to 10 years to even get there, to even have a chance. And so you're in difficult times. You need someone who knows how it works. You need someone who knows how it operates. But you also need someone that's going to make things happen and not just be there for the sake of being there. I know that in my experience, I have delivered to the 23rd Congressional District and wherever I've represented. And so I haven't been about just being a representative and sitting back, and I've also been engaged with the community, with having town hall meetings and having coffees and having congressmen in your corners. I come home I've served for 12 years. I come home every single weekend, and so I have I'm a hard worker, and I think that I've always felt that I cannot work any of my opponents. So So with that, I'll ask for your consideration and your vote come the Democratic primary on May 29th, unless it changes.
All right. Cedar Rodriguez, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you very much, okay?